Clause number 1323191 CV, Guadalupe County Sheriff's Office and Guadalupe County versus Priscilla Garcia individually and his next friend of MG, a minor child. You may begin, Mr. Sureheart. Thank you.
I think the county here is to have the argument here in San Antonio, you know, although I wouldn't mind driving down to visit. It's a good place to buy a stamp to be a leader of us.
Can you speak up just a little bit? Is the mic on? I wonder if the mic is on.
Is this on?
I don't know if it is.
Is it just me or can you?
I can't. I can't hear. Okay.
Hello?
You can just speak up.
I'll try to do that.
That's good. Yeah.
This is a case where we have a lot of the county sheriff's offices who are pursuing a stolen truck, a stolen new Guadalupe. It passes over into the gas station, runs a metal line, and collides on the several vehicles, including the police and the here. We've got some problems with this case in that plaintiff and intervener have never pled a valid waiver of immunity of the Texas Tort Claims Act because none of the vehicles, the sheriff department vehicles, were involved in the accident. So under the Tort Claims Act, they couldn't have caused the injury that the plaintiff sustained. Instead, the trial court, instead of taking up the jurisdiction, granted a motion for continuance to gather more discovery.
Now, as you well know, the trial court does have the discretion to do that under these circumstances. But as I understand it, it's somewhat limited in that the trial court should direct to the discovery to be targeted to the plea to the jurisdiction. So you've argued in your brief that this is an unlimited, I think you used the word unlimited, unrestricted order. The order is just a general order from what I saw. Was there any discussion at the hearing, any argument at the hearing regarding whether the discovery should be limited or targeted to, you know, certain issues?
There was. Unfortunately, there's no record of what went on the hearing because the motion for continuance wasn't set for a hearing, wasn't properly before the court because it didn't comply the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure 251 and 255. It wasn't verified. It didn't state the discovery that was sought. It didn't say anything about due diligence and what was done to seek that discovery. And it didn't contain the passage that's required by the statute. But this is not for delay of law. This is so that justice may be done. None of that was in there. It's filed 2 days before the hearing. So it wasn't even supposed to be heard. Otherwise, I would have had a record made at the hearing.
A hearing was held, but there's no transcript of the hearing. Is that what you're saying?
Transcript of the hearing.
Okay.
Correct. Because the only thing that we were going to hear was the jurisdiction. And the jurisdiction, as you know, goes up on a de novo basis. So a record really isn't necessary for that. For that purpose, because the arguments
So, from your recollection at that hearing, though we don't have a transcript, was the scope of discovery discussed?
The scope of discovery was discussed, but there was no limitation placed on it. The court didn't actually rule during the hearing. Instead, the minister told us that he was going to allow discovery.
Okay.
And our problem here is the county stands to lose a very significant statutory rights under this. The case was filed when an intervener comes in, and the petition was filed on November 4, 2022. That's very important. Intervener comes in shortly thereafter. The intervener has made amended complaints all along. So that keeps moving the goalpost. But the plaintiff has never admitted their complaint. What we surmise is that they were trying to extend this out beyond the 180 days so we lose the automatic stay that we would ordinarily get from a denial to a plea to a jurisdiction. That's why we told the court we need to have a ruling on this plea to jurisdiction, because if we do all of this discovery with all of the officers, the dispatcher, and the supervisor, we will be way out beyond the 180 days, and the county will lose a very important statutory remedy that the legislature is putting there to protect it. So limited discovery wouldn't solve the two problems that plaintiffs have got. They haven't pled that any of the sheriff's department vehicles were actually involved in the accident. And the case law is very clear. If the vehicle's not involved in the accident, there's no jurisdiction, there's no waiver under the Texas Tort Claims Act. The one exception that I found is Ryder, of course, and Ryder, that the vehicle had its lights on which caused the accident. But there's no such allegation here. Moreover, the second.
So, in any high speed chase, if the vehicle being pursued, and there's a, you know, emergency vehicles and all everything that we're familiar with under the case law, if the law enforcement vehicle does not make any impact whatsoever with the victim, there's no waiver at all. Even if they say that they have not, you know, the speed is unreasonable and they have not used the discretion that they're.
Well, that would come under the emergency exception.
Okay.
You could go under that.
Right. So there is the emergency exception. Okay. Okay.
No sheriff's department vehicle impacted. We have in the evidence for the jurisdiction, we have all the reports and everything.
But haven't they had pled sufficient for the emergency exception?
They haven't pled sufficiently to get around the exception. The other issue is they haven't pled, like the plaintiff has only sued the Guadalupe County Sheriff's Department, which is a non-jural entity. So in this case, no amount of discovery would have fixed plaintiff's problems. They could take discovery between now and 6 months from now and could never develop that either a sheriff's department vehicle hit and thereby caused the injuries that their clients sustained.
Okay, let me ask you a question, though, about that. You said they have only sued the sheriff's department. They did not sue Guadalupe County separately?
They only sued the sheriff's department.
But the intervener has sued
both? The intervener has brought in Guadalupe County, and he pointed out that the sheriff's department is a non-jural entity. So the sheriff's department and the county are in there right now.
Now, I'm going to confess, I've never heard of a non-jural entity. I've never had it come up in any of these few cases that we get.
So, Counselor, if we go to, like, just the very beginning, if we assume with us that it is within the court's discretion to grant limited discovery or grant a continuance of a plea to jurisdiction, do we even have jurisdiction to hear this right now?
I know I'm fighting kind of an uphill battle on that, but under the circumstances here, where there was no pleading that even got to the point where there was a waiver under the Tort Claims Act, and the court ruled on a motion for continuance that was not in compliance with 252, which is the gateway to get into seeking that, it's, I think, inherently a ruling on the merits, that there was merit, it was meritorious enough for them to go forward with discovery, even though clearly on the face of the pleadings, there's no waiver of jurisdiction.
But for us to have jurisdiction, we would have to construe this granting of a continuance as an implicit denial, as you have argued in your briefs. And there is some case law that says that granting a continuance, since it's not, has nothing to do with the merits, that it does not constitute an implicit denial.
And I would agree with you under most circumstances. In this particular circumstance, we kept moving the goalposts back and back, and getting closer and closer to that 180-day deadline where the county would lose that automatic stay. This is akin to a court that doesn't rule on taking jurisdiction at all. And time goes on and on and on. It's an implicit ruling, a denial under those circumstances.
Any case law that helps us with that issue specifically?
I've seen some case law on that, Justice Longoria, and I'd be happy to submit that in the committee. A post-submission brief, if you'd like. But I did not bring that with me today.
Is that okay with the panel?
Yes.
So, I think that's why I think that this is an implicit denial, because it kept. There's no reason to grant any additional discovery. And I've cited a number of cases in connection with the McDaniels portion of this, and say that the court didn't have discretion to grant discovery when the pleadings don't show a valid waiver of immunity. And I realize, but I do realize that that jurisdictional ground is there. I'm arguing an uphill battle, and I admit that.
And if we construe this as if we determine we do not have jurisdiction and construe this as a writ of mandamus, then if we were to grant your relief, it would simply to send it back to the trial court for a ruling on the plea.
If this court determines it does not have jurisdiction over the appeal, yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And we would ask in those circumstances that you direct the court to rule on the the jurisdiction within 30 days, so we can stay under that 180-day limit, so the county has full benefit of local legislature experience.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. Mr. Garza?
Yes.
Good morning. I'm not sure why you chose not to file a brief, but I do have to say that a brief would have been very helpful to the court.
Yes, I understand. May I please report? In fact, we looked at these issues. Well, just for clarification, I'm going to be handling the argument regarding the lack of jurisdiction that this court currently has over this matter, because there's not been a decision on the merits, and Mr. Stewart will be handling some of the other arguments regarding the merits of the pleadings as it relates to whether proper cause of action can be pled, whether there needs to be contact between the vehicles in order for there to be a waiver of the government. Before we get into the merits of the arguments of the lack of jurisdiction, I think it's important for the court to understand a few of the basic facts that were omitted from the appellant's brief when they filed this attack in advance. This was not just a regular run of the law. We've got a situation where originally a vehicle was stolen near the city of Marion, over in Guadalupe. The driver of the vehicle, who's the husband of the owner, had left his cell phone and the keys in the vehicle, which is why the thief was so easily able to respond with the vehicle. As a result of that, the police were able to track the vehicle in real time, which is how they were able to locate the vehicle and track that. Okay, so the Guadalupe Bay County Police, the Sheriff's Department, should I say, decided to begin a high-speed chase that in which very clearly the person fleeing that chase showed that in the course of that chase was willing to act very recklessly and put the public in danger. That chase proceeded across county lines into Bexar County up along Loop 1604, and this crash occurred there at the intersection of 1604 and Interstate 10, a major intersection around 5 o'clock in the afternoon during rush hour. Now, this collision was so severe that it nearly killed the mother and her infant child, and severely injured the husband and father of those two. Now, while we will get to the discussion about whether there is a fact issue, we believe there is, as to whether the emergency exception would apply, given that the vehicle could be tracked by the cell phone, meaning that a stolen vehicle could have been recovered through much less obtrusive and risky and dangerous behavior without the need to put the public at risk in this high-speed chase. He has talked about why we're here. I think the only reason why we're here is because the appellants continue to put the cart before the horse, which is they are contending that they are entitled to an appeal because they believe that a ruling has been made on the merits when it very clearly has not. One need only look to Exhibit C that's attached to their brief, which is the order that the court previously referenced on this case, where the only mention of the plea of the jurisdiction in the order is in the title itself. In the body of the order, the court does not mention, does not touch on the ruling on the merits regarding the plea for jurisdiction. It merely provides additional time for the conducting discovery. Now, while a record was not requested or produced in this case, there was significant discussion at the hearing in front of the Honorable Judge Walden Sheldon about the purpose for this continuance. The continuance was sought for the purpose of providing us an opportunity to arm ourselves with facts in a situation where we're going to be before the court arguing a fact issue argument. Essentially, what the appellant is asking for is that we go into a prize fight with our hands tied behind our backs.
And was the argument that you needed more discovery in order to properly respond to the plea?
Yes. There was a plea to the jurisdiction and a motion to transfer a venue that was actually pending before the court that day. The actual timeline is that we filed our petition on November the 4th, of 2022. 11 days later, the appellants filed their motion to transfer. The motion to transfer was set for a hearing the following day on November the 16th. To be held 6 days later on November the 22nd. Because there was no attempt to confer on that setting, we were not available. The appellants filed an amended notice on November the 18th, setting the hearing on the motion for the motion to transfer until December the 1st. At that time, we filed our motion to continue the motion to transfer, because again, there were facts related to proper venue that would have come out if we had been allowed the opportunity to do discovery, which we obviously have not, since we were less than 2 weeks from filing our petition at that point. It wasn't until more than 3 months after they filed their motion to transfer a venue that the appellants then filed their plea to the jurisdiction. Now, I think it's important for the court to know that we have discussion with the appellant's counsel at the time they filed their motion to transfer venue, and we had a gentleman's agreement not to conduct any discovery until the motion to transfer venue was determined. This is, mind you, 3 months before he filed his plea for jurisdiction, because we thought there might be some disputes over what discovery we might be entitled to.
Well, as you know, we can't consider anything that's not in the record. So even though you may have had that agreement, all we have before us is the cold record, which is, that's the order. We don't even have a transcript from the hearing with regard to the discussion as to the purpose of discovery. So that's all we can go with. And the question is whether there's an implicit denial of the plea to the jurisdiction.
Yes, it is well settled in Texas that a continuance of a plea to the jurisdiction is not an implied ruling on the merits of that plea.
That's well settled?
Yes.
And you have a case right on point?
Yes, Your Honor.
This is where your brief would have been very helpful, sir.
Specifically, Judge, in March of 2022, the Austin Court of Appeals had a rule that a continuance of a plea of the jurisdiction is not an implicit denial. In that case, Governor Abbott argued that the granting of the TRO and the continuance of a plea was an implicit denial, and the Abbott Court very specifically ruled that is not an implicit denial, and they cited a case from 2011, Texas Department of Public Safety v. Salazar.
Do you have the site on the Abbott case?
On the Abbott case, yes, it is. That was Abbott v. Doe, and it is number 03-22-00100.
Could you say it again? I'm sorry.
Yes, Abbott v. Doe.
Yes.
Number 03-22-00107-CB. It is Texas Public Lexis 1607 at page 3. And that's out of Texas, the Austin Appellate Court, the March 29th. That Abbott court cited another case out of the Third Court of Appeals, which is Texas Department of Public Safety, Salazar, which is number 03-11, that is 0206-CV, 2011, Text App, Lexis 2921 at page 1.
I think there's also Texas Tech University versus Dolcifino Communications. That's the case I was looking at earlier when I asked Mr. Sherpart.
The Dolcifino ruling actually cites both Abbott and Salazar and relies on those two cases very heavily in determining, once again, that it is not an implicit denial. Also, out of the Houston Board of Appeals, we have the City of Galveston v. Gray, which is 93 Southwest 3rd, 587 at 590. And in that case, which petition was later denied by the Supreme Court, the Gray Court ordered that a continuing of a legal jurisdiction for the purpose of allowing discovery is not an implicit denial. There are also numerous cases that authorize trial courts to permit jurisdictional discovery when there's a pending plea of jurisdiction. We have Texas Department of Parks and Wildlife v. Miranda, which is 1310 Southwest 3rd, 217 at 227, which is the Texas Supreme Court case in 2004. And you have the Bass v. Waller County Subregional Planning Commission case. It is 514 Southwest 3rd, 908. It's also out of the Austin Appeals Court in 2017. So it's a well-settled premise, and we believe that this is this court currently does not have jurisdiction over the particular issue raised with regards to an implied ruling that has actually never occurred.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Stewart.
I'll be brief. I think it's important to point to this court's own experience with this issue. Less than a year ago in Cameron County versus Saucy, we heard some of these same arguments. Except in that case, the trial court permitted discovery to take place, which meant that various officers were taken. Plaintiff is taken. All of that deposition testimony was available to them, in addition to the policies and procedures for Cameron County. So in that case, the trial court denied the plea of the jurisdiction such that the argument came before you. And
that kind of seems familiar, was it, Mike?
In fact,
well, the name sounds familiar.
You asked a number of very interesting questions to plaintiff's counsel, Collins' counsel was Brian Miller, and the appellee's counsel, Mr. De Leon, but you basically focused their discussion on the idea of the emergency exception. And you asked a number of questions about, well, how would you prove the emergency exception, whether it applied or not? That necessarily involved deposition testimony. Mm-hmm. It necessarily involved the testimony from the officers as to what they were thinking and what they were doing. And the argument that was made to you was, they didn't have enough officers that day, so this person drove on the sidewalk and hit a plaintiff that was in the sidewalk. So they argued, okay, well, the officer needed to get to this place, so the emergency exception applied, so the waiver wasn't there. In this case, we are asking for the same opportunity to take those depositions, to figure out what these officers are thinking as they cross county lines and are in contact with Bexar County, to see what they were thinking and why they proceeded where they did. I'm going to add one little thing, and it's about this argument that unless the police car strikes the plaintiff's car, there is no claim. We've got two cases which call that into question. The Ryder case, which was the Texas Supreme Court case, where Texas Supreme Court looked at the conduct of an officer who pulled over a truck. It was at night, about 3 a.m. in the morning. He pulls over the truck. He pulls behind the truck such that his lights are shining in the opposite direction. An unfortunate truck is coming the other way. It's blinded by the lights. It strikes the rear of the truck, and the unfortunate driver of the second truck passes away. So in that case, they argued, well, there wasn't contact between the police car and the other vehicle. It was two trucks. And in that case, they found that lighting system, that decision, was a nexus between the conduct of the officer and the injuries sustained by the plaintiff. So the next case we have that sort of interprets this is City of El Paso versus Camilloso. And I can give you that site if you need it. But it's a case where there are people, much like Ms. Mosquero case out of the Fourth Court of Appeals went to the Texas Supreme Court, there are officers who are trying to catch people that are fleeing from a theft. And the thieves realize that they're being followed. So one thief accelerates his car until approximately 60 to 80 miles per hour and runs into the back of an innocent couple that is simply sitting there at the intersection. And again, City of El Paso argued, well, hold on, we didn't strike the rear of that vehicle. So the argument then turned to, well, what were these officers thinking? And the City of El Paso had a very interesting argument. They said, well, they didn't know that they were being pursued, so we don't have the emergency exception, so there's not a waiver. And I'm not sure that's the best argument in the world, but that's what they made, and the jurisdiction was ultimately not supported. So we don't need contact between the police officers and the plaintiff's vehicle. We need a nexus. There is ultimately a position where we may be back here. I understand that. But we should be back here after certain discovery has taken place. Does that mean that we're taking 15 depositions? No, it doesn't. I need the depositions of the officers involved in the chase. I need to know what the dispatch said. I need to know that information because I want to know why these officers moving into a different jurisdiction decided that they would continue the chase despite the fact that they were moving into a metropolitan area that had two different police systems that could have helped them. Bexar County and the San Antonio Police Department. So that's where we are. And I hate to do it, but I need to add one more. The hearing.
It's your time.
I wanted to give you as much river walk time as possible.
Oh, that's fine.
The hearing that was scheduled was actually a motion to transfer venue, which makes it hard for me to understand how counsel is saying, well, we were about to waive this 180 days. Counsel is actually asking this court, the Bexar County Trial Court, to move it to Guadalupe County such that he could then have the plea of the jurisdiction heard. So this time period is passing. I don't think that acts as a waiver.
But you said the hearing was on the motion to transfer venue, not on the plea of the jurisdiction?
The way it was styled is hearing on the plea of the jurisdiction and motion to transfer.
Okay, so it's
so in our response, we're like, well, are you really asking this court to rule before you get ruling under the immediate? Right. So it was a confusing situation for all, and ultimately, I think the court understands the inherent problem with us being here at this point. And as I said a few seconds ago, we may well be back in this courtroom because there are some issues that there's some confusion on the various circuits and various groups, but that's another day.
Well, and if you are back, I ask you both, please file a brief. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
In that case, the Supreme Court said, quote, the trial court must determine at its earliest opportunity whether it has the constitutional or statutory authority to decide the case for the allowing the if the county has to go through all of this discovery, the county loses its immunity, which is immunity from suit. In this case, we have a plea to the jurisdiction where the allegations in the petition don't provide a waiver under the Texas Court Claims, under the Texas Court Claims Act. We heard about a case called Ryder. Ryder was an interesting case and is discussed at length in Henry Dallas County, which is one of the cases that's cited in our authority. Henry Dallas County is a great case because it goes all the way from when the Texas Supreme Court decided the what's the name of that case? It goes through City of Galveston versus Gray, it goes through all of those, but where the Texas Supreme Court decided that it was a Dallas Transit Authority case, where a person was let out in a certain spot. And the Supreme Court said, well, letting you out at a certain spot and you become injured as a result of that isn't a use of the motor-driven vehicle such that it caused the injury.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we are here. There has to be a use of the vehicle that causes the injury. The way the Supreme Court in Ryder distinguished this was because in Ryder, the use of the vehicle was the use of the lights of the vehicle to blind the oncoming driver. But that's the only exception that you can find out there where the use of the vehicle didn't actually involve the vehicle causing the accident. In that Henry Dallas County case, there's my best case for the application here is Williams versus City of Baytown at 467 Southwest 3rd, 566, and that's that Houston First District Court of Appeals. And it goes through everything from the Watford case down through these car accident cases involving police chases and explains each of those cases in great detail.
Okay. But before we get there, we still have to make sure we have jurisdiction. And so how do you respond to the case law that was just cited regarding the granting of a motion for continuance not constituting an implicit denial?
And I acknowledge that case law is out there, Your Honor, but when we got a case that doesn't even reach this place,
but we can't even look at that if we don't have jurisdiction.
You can't look at that unless you determine that this is an implicit denial of the jurisdiction. And under these circumstances, I'm asking the court to do that. Because under these circumstances, the court didn't need any additional discovery to determine the jurisdictional issues, to determine whether or not there was a police car that was involved in the accident. Plaintiffs' pleadings and intervenors' pleadings foreclose that because they weren't involved. The state of mind of the officers don't matter unless you get to the emergency exception. Mm-hmm. But under these pleadings, you don't even get to a waiver of the Texas Tort Claims Act. No additional amount of discovery would resolve the problem of a non-jural entity that can't sue and be sued in the state of Texas. The court should have considered and granted our plea of jurisdiction, and it didn't. It refused to rule on it and allowed unlimited discovery. We think the court uses discretion in doing so. And we think under these circumstances, that's implicit.
Okay.
But I do realize
we'll take a look.
Any other questions?
We'll take a look at it.
Thank
no.
you so much.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
You asked about some post-submission on the issue of inherent ruling on a PPJ when a court just didn't rule on it and the time lapsed.
Yes.
And I have a couple of cases on that. How would you like those submitted and when?
Letter brief is fine. Two weeks?
Letter brief will work, and if I could have...
2 weeks? Is that enough? Or
if I have the end of next week, I'll be happy to do it.
That's fine. You are granted that request, and if there's a response, you're welcome to respond. Thank you.
Thank you.
The case will be under submission. Appreciate it.